You can create your own super culture based on all the different places you've lived.
Stockholm is a state of minds. Hey, Stockholm is a state of minds. Yeah, we break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast. Stockholm is where it's at. Let's go.
Welcome to Stockholm is a state of minds, the only podcast you need to become Swede-ish. I'm Philip Rohr.
And I'm Maria Fogelström. And we are the hosts of this podcast, created for international people who have moved to Sweden so they can learn more about the new home country and to make them feel more welcome here. Today we have an exciting guest, Philip.
Yes.
When I think about her, I see a kaleidoscope. Like, you look into it and you see one colorful image, then you turn the kaleidoscope a bit and you see a new colorful image, and you turn it again, and so it goes. Welcome to the studio, Lola Akinmade Åkerström.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Thanks for coming.
Great. Can you please introduce yourself?
Wow.
How would you do that?
You know, I always start with saying that I am a storyteller.
Mm.
And I am somebody who holds space for people and gives grace. And so as a storyteller, you know, whether I'm a photographer or writer and author, the platform isn't as important as the story I'm trying to tell.
Mm.
So that's how I choose what platform is best suited for the story I'm trying to tell. So whether it's photography or painting or writing, but at the core, I'm a storyteller.
How did that start?
So I grew up in Lagos, Nigeria.
Mm.
And very early on, you know, I grew up in a place where there was just a diversity of culture. We have over 250 different tribes speaking over 500 different languages and dialects.
Yeah.
And so I've always been curious and fascinated by culture and how we can share, how a lot of people can share the same small spaces.
Mm.
And so I started writing fiction as a teenager and then moved into nonfiction and travel writing. And then today as an author. So, yeah.
So my image of a kaleidoscope is quite, when you describe Lagos now, I feel like, yeah, maybe that was something.
Yes.
I also saw, looked on your, I'm really interested in languages. And when I write Akinmade in Swedish, you use Swedish letters. But I saw you had also different accents on your, which is your mother tongue?
Yes. So English is actually the official language in Nigeria, but I'm Yoruba. So that's my tribe. And so when I got married and accepted my last name with all the Swedish umlauts, I'm like, wait a minute, why can't my own,
of course,
you know, name show its own, you know, intonations?
Yes.
And so I've got the Yoruba intonations coupled with the Swedish umlauts as well. So.
Wow. Neat.
Neat. So you grew up in Nigeria. Yes. Sort of what is the long but brief journey to Stockholm then?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So grew up until I was 15 and then moved to the US to start college.
Okay.
And so I'm a naturalized American, lived in the US, worked in IT for many years as a programmer.
Yeah.
And then I met a man, and that's how I ended up in Sweden.
Yeah.
That's how most people
this story, right?
That's it.
We don't attract anything
else. I was reciting now, so it's like, that's how I ended up here.
So I've read a little, some of your articles online and how you articulate sort of your way of thinking. You talk about your storyteller. And so can you share sort of the story, some stories about how maybe the difference between moving to the U.S. And then moving from the U.S. to Sweden, and sort of, I really like that you pick out sort of differences between the idea of assimilation and integration.
Yes.
And I love defining words and what do they actually mean.
Nah.
So yeah, sort of what is your thinking about that connected to your story then?
No, absolutely. So I always say the quickest way to understand a culture is how the culture deals with stress.
Mm.
And so growing up in Nigeria, when you think of stress factors, kind of your physiological needs, you know, do I have food, water, shelter?
Mm.
Do I feel safe? Just the base needs on that Maslow hierarchy of needs.
Yep.
In Nigeria, we know that those needs may not be met. Mm-hmm. And so we live each day vibrantly, like you're not going to, like maybe you may not live tomorrow.
Yeah.
So it's a more vibrant culture. We live in the now, parties every day, like it's a very vibrant culture. when I moved to the US, I noticed, okay, those physiological needs, we cannot agree on how to solve them because we've got two different parties, we've got two different opinions. So how can we creatively mask them so we can keep being productive, right? Because we still need to live every day, but we still can agree on how to solve those. So the US breeds a very competitive, very kind of innovative culture and competitive culture. And then when you come to the Nordics, well, in order for us to be productive, we have to cover those physiological needs first.
Yep.
And that's where we've got, you know, the work-life balance and all of that.
Mm.
And so pulling those three things, you can kind of see how the different cultures manifest themselves, right? In the Nordics, for me to be very productive, I have to have my physiological needs met first.
Mm.
And so just in terms of kind of integration and assimilation, moving from Nigeria to the US, I was already coming with my own identity, right?
Mm.
And so when I moved to the US, the US was able to make space for my dual identity. Was saying, you know what, you can be American as well, but you can also be Nigerian.
Mm.
Those two don't compete. They're actually complementary as long as you follow the rules, share some of the values. We can make space for that duality.
Mm.
When I moved to Sweden, Sweden wants more assimilation than integration. And the problem with assimilation is it's a very impossible thing to ask someone to do because you're telling them to drop their identity to become more of the host. So be less Nigerian so you can be more Swedish. And I always say this, my name Lola in Yoruba is actually much longer. So my full name is Onaralola Olua.
Wow. Mm.
And it's Onaralola Olua in Yoruba. And it means God moves in mysterious ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which also means my favorite YouTube song is Mysterious Ways, you know.
Yes.
But it has meaning. It has spiritual meaning. There's a reason why my parents gave me that name. Now imagine if I had to move into Sweden and change my name from Lola to Lotta just to get a job. And kind of drop that core part of my identity. So that is the difference between assimilation and integration. Is assimilation says be less of who you already are so you can be more like me, for me to accept you.
Mm.
And that's a very impossible thing to ask of anyone. And I think it's also confusing because when Sweden says we want people to integrate, they actually mean assimilate. And so they keep using the wrong word for what you truly mean, which is very confusing for people.
Integration is more like a political term.
Yeah. But they actually mean assimilation versus actually true integration.
It would be interesting to know. I think of this as like the hyphen phenomena in the US.
Yes.
Where most people have a hyphen.
Yes.
Italian American.
Yes.
Nigerian American.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It would be interesting to do a survey in Sweden given a quarter of the country is foreign born.
Yes.
Who would still sort of identify with the hyphen?
Yes. I'm actually working on a photography project now called Afro-Swede.
Mm.
Yes.
And
the project.
Listeners, you have to look into Lola's Instagram account. It's so, I love it.
Yeah, thank you. And what I'm doing, so with the word Afro, I put the Swedish umlauts on the word.
Yeah.
And then the word Swede, I put the African intonations.
Mm.
And it's a visual celebration of both.
Mm.
So what I'm trying to say is if you are proud of both, identities, then I want to photograph you proudly showing that.
Yes.
And then the captions will be the hyphenated.
Mm.
And so that's what I'm trying to do.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think now you have lived kind of a third of your life in Sweden, a third in the US, and a third in Nigeria. Do you feel that you're more of one of those, or are you just now a great mix of everything?
I feel I'm hyphenated. So one thing I always say is you can create your own super culture based on all the different places you've lived.
Mm.
So I've created my own personal super culture where I take all the vibrancy and community mindset of Nigeria, added to the go-getter, competitive, spirit of the US, and then work-life balance it all out, in Swedish. And so that's what I've done. I've taken the best of all.
Yeah.
I've left the worst of all. And then I've hyphenate myself, meaning I'm Nigerian, American, Swede. Mm. And I accept all those parts of my identity. Mm. I'm not going to choose one over the other.
Mm. No, because you are you and you have all it, yes, all inside you.
Yes, exactly.
I looked at this because I think you're an amazing artist with so many different ways of expression. And I had a question if those are a way of finding your place in the world, mm, in text and images.
Mm. Yes. So I always say that sometimes when you find your creative voice, mm, it's usually tied to a source of pain or a source of like discomfort in your past. Mm. So my creative voice, all my work is tied to cultural understanding and cultural connection. Mm. And that all came from when I moved to the US. Mm. As a teenager, I was already coming, knowing who I was, but moving into a society that had already created a box for me, mm, that, yeah, said, okay, come on. Oh, you're a Black woman. This is your box. Yeah. And I'm like, well, but I'm a lot of other things. And so what happens is when we do not understand each other, we isolate each other and we exclude each other. Mm. And so I felt a lot of that growing, mm, up in the US as well. I was isolated a lot. I was excluded a lot until I found my different communities, right? And so that is what I bring into my work to, mm, say my work is the visual representation of the words, I see you, meaning I see you, I want to understand you as you are, you're more than enough. And then I do that through my words or through the photography. That's how I found my creative voice. Mm-hmm. So my work tries to fight isolation and exclusion within my sphere of influence. That's it. That's, mm, my work. Mm. It's I see you.
Mm. I have some friends who are art and design professors, and they have a gallery and a podcast, and what they often talk about, like the human condition is all about knowing and being known. Yeah. And that's what, yeah, yeah, I hear. And I think this interesting interplay between words and images and telling stories. And I think that creating anything, I was trying to remember where I heard this first. And all the sources that I looked, it wasn't this. So, but that creating anything is intrinsically a hopeful act.
Yes.
Because, yes, there's an imagined future, yes, that you see. And so I'm really curious. I mean, you've talked about sort of coming from experiences of pain, mm, and suffering, mm, and exclusion, and sort of where does this, you create so much. So like, where does the hope come from for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, because I'm a travel writer, I, mm, spend a lot of time in different cultures. I travel quite a bit. And at the end of the day, what makes us very similar is we all want to be seen, mm, heard, and appreciated for, mm, who we already are, right? And so if I can create that space through my work for people to feel seen, to, mm, feel heard, to feel acknowledged, for me, that's, you know, that's already a blessing, right? Mm. Mm. And so that is where I come from. That is what drives my work, is, mm, that hope, mm, but also that once we truly listen and see each other, truly see each other, mm, then we're going to start understanding each other better and then hopefully make space to appreciate our differences, mm, right? Because all this, you know, we're always fighting against each other. We're always doing all of this. It's because we're not giving space or making space for our differences, you know, and different ways of thinking. Mm.
We meet people every day who recently came here to start a new life here, mm, in some way. And many of them are feeling lonely. They are maybe depressed. They maybe left a difficult situation, and they are searching for a new community. And that's not so easy. And how to do that? We have been talking about religious communities, but of course you can find other sports or anything. But I think maybe that's a challenge when you change culture. How to, mm, find your community? And I think especially in Sweden, where everything is so kind of divided, you're that or that or, yeah. Yes. What do you say?
No, absolutely. And that's why I wrote Logom, right? Mm-hmm. So I wrote the book to fully unpack the Swedish way of thinking, mm, so that people can understand what's cultural and what's them and what's, you know, navigate that. But also, this is why it's important for books written by outsiders about Swedish culture to be in Swedish.
Yes.
Because if I, as a Swede, am not reading other people's views of how I'm interacting with them, then I would never know. So I will say, well, why are these communities being segregated or coming up in different places? Well, because they feel seen there, you know? Yeah. And that's what I always say is, if I don't feel fully seen and acknowledged in one, I'm going to go find the community where I am reminded of my humanity.
Yes.
Right? Mm. And so this is why it's very important for, you know, culturally, books written by foreigners that talk about Swedish society need to be translated to Swedish.
They definitely need to be translated.
Exactly. Because, because if you don't see yourself from a different angle, then you would always, you will not never see your blind spots, right? So, and that was why I say, you know, for example, the word logom, I have a different definition as a objective,
Tell us.
because when I first moved there, people kept saying, oh, it meant not too little, not too, you know, just that. But then there were a lot of Swedes that did not like the word, right? I'm like, if it's just a word, then why are people really against it? And that's when I realized it's a way of managing stress. So if you think of it as a scale, too much stress is the scale, too little. So what can I do to keep that scale balanced? Which is what habits, sustainable habits, right? In my personal life, it's perfect. It wants me to live my best life. It's trying to create a life I can sustain by removing stress within my control. But if you take that same scale into society, it's doing the exact same thing. It's trying to remove stress.
And I never thought about and it like
since
that.
My, and it's... since my logom is not your logom, it's trying to make me live my best life. My best life may be better than your best life. And then I'm stressing you because you see me living my best life. And so the same
very
ethos.
Philosophical.
So the same ethos, depending on context, is good or bad. All it does is it tries to do what it's meant to do, which is remove stress. And so that's why people don't like it. And so if people are not reading this objectively, that grew up with logom, they cannot see it from a different angle, right? So yeah.
You've written about this, and I think you termed it sort of your books not being translated into Swedish, termed it as also uncomfortable Swedes.
Correct.
And I think we talk a lot about sort of with people who are newly arrived to Sweden, sort of that the society is quite conflict averse.
Yes.
Or people can disagree with that, and it just has a unique way of handling conflict risk. And I think I've been sort of reflecting on why not translate your books and sort of this idea of uncomfortable Swede. Can you reflect a little bit about sort of why also you think, given the number of years you've lived here,
yes,
why that's the case?
Well, I mean, I think Swedish culture is very sensitive in the sense that criticism is taken personally as opposed to objectively, right?
So dangerous.
Yeah, and it's a very dangerous thing. We should be able to have heated discussions and still live as friends, right? And I think that's the issue is if I'm saying this is constructive criticism, because Sweden has obviously been kind of a beacon and kind of this innovative leader and moral conscience of the world, it has taken that title so to heart that if there's anything that shows a different side of that, then it's very difficult to see it. And so that's the issue is we need to be able to, I call it tilling the soil, right? So if you want to grow something, you have to get air into the soil so that the seeds can grow, right? Which means it's uncomfortable. You are messing things up, but then the seeds actually thrive, right? Because we are listening to each other. We're beginning to create the environment we all need to thrive. But if we keep it compacted, that soil really pressed down, it can be difficult.
Mm.
And that's the thing is, let's keep it compacted because we have this image to uphold. But on the contrary, the world says we're all vulnerable. If you do not show your vulnerability, then I cannot connect with you.
Mm.
If I don't see myself in you, then I can't connect.
Mm.
And so I think that's what kind of Sweden needs to do more. Just show that, you know what? We're amazing at all these things. Nobody can deny that. But we're also vulnerable.
Mm.
And we're human. And we make mistakes too. And it's okay.
Mm.
People will accept that.
Oh, I have to ask, have you heard of the artist Makoto Fujimura?
No.
Here's a hyphenation. Okay. He's a Japanese-American artist. And he, you just said exactly what I wanted to ask you about. Because he takes a concept or a monster that's in Beowulf, and he sort of modernizes the idea, and he talks about border stalking.
Mm.
And exactly what you just said. So he's talking about artists. And so I think your story in a kaleidoscope of ways sort of shows that you are a border stalker.
Yes.
And I want to just read a quote that he has about this because it's quite applicable here. He says, "Border stalking is not a comfortable role. Life on the borders of a group and in the space between groups is prone to dangers, literal and figurative, with people both at home and among the other likely to misunderstand or mistrust the motivations, piety, and loyalty of the border stalker." But what then he says is it gives this sort of eyes to see that others don't have. And that allows you to inject nuance, diversity, paradox, that gives then people in the other groups sort of empathy and the opportunity to reconcile. And I think especially in a world that can be very culture wary, he calls this culture care.
Mm.
And so I
love that culture care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the picture I get when I hear about your work as an artist and also having lived in different cultures and between different cultures. So yeah. No, what do you think about when you hear that?
No, absolutely. I think that's spot on, you know, and I love that description. And, you know, I always say two things can be true, right?
Mm.
So I am a travel writer who writes about the most amazing things about Sweden. I mean, just recently I brought people to go chase the Northern Lights, right?
Ah.
And photograph. But I'm also a Black woman in Sweden, right? And, you know, I face my own daily microaggressions. And so two things can be true, and being able to create space for those things to be true, so, and not kind of deny or craft narratives, right?
Mm.
So I like that. And I do this out of love, right? I care about the culture. You know, my kids, I'm raising its next generation, right? Mm. So all of this is from a place of deep love.
I have a question. When I lived abroad, I could feel that I was completely integrated and living in the society. My kids were born abroad. They went up to school. We met friends, our life was there. But my frustration I experienced was about not really understanding the politics, the history, and lack of references that I could miss when I talk to people in that country. When people talk about old TV shows or kids programs that everybody were familiar with, or in those moments I really felt like an outsider. It was just not possible to catch up there. That was frustrating. But I tried to see it, like to turn it and say that was, in this situation, was maybe quite interesting to not be as everybody else.
Mm.
See what I mean?
Yes, yes. No, I understand. And I think in those kind of situations, you need to give yourself grace because you are not born in the culture or you are not born in the place. And even if you live there for 40 years, you're still going to miss some things that maybe, because maybe you didn't go to school there, right? So that's where the concept of just giving yourself grace, but then the host culture giving immigrants and expatriates and everybody grace, because it's very difficult to move to a different culture as an adult, pretty much leaving everything you've known, learning the language from scratch, navigating, and then still not be given grace by the host culture. It's a very difficult thing. And I think some cultures the US is a lot more graceful in that sense, that they give you grace to try and integrate, you know, maybe the UK as well, or other cultures, but there are some countries that are not as graceful in that aspect, even though they might be generous. There's a difference between being generous and open and actually being graceful.
That's a really interesting word you use. Yeah. That is not very Swedish, I agree.
Yeah. So you can say, look at all the great things I give you, but then you're not giving me grace to catch up, to learn, to do all the things. And even when I do that, I'm still not giving the grace to just be myself, you know, so, yeah.
Are these some of the themes that you are sort of bringing out in your latest book, Everything Is Not Enough?
Yeah. Yes. Because, and the title alone says, if you keep looking for validation in somebody else's gaze, it will never be enough because you are not the one creating the rules. So you could get all the degrees, you could work twice as hard, you could keep going, but because you are not the one involved in setting those rules, it will never be enough. So you might as well start focusing on yourself, focusing on your own mental health, and creating the space for you personally to grow and thrive. And yeah, and it's kind of like a follow-up to my first novel, which was In Every Mirror She's Black, which talked about a lot of these issues.
I love that title.
Yeah.
It says so much.
It is. So
it's all very true.
Yeah, and it covers lots of different Black women from different socioeconomic classes, from the 1% to the janitors, and saying it doesn't matter. That's the first thing people will see before they talk to you. And I always liken it to, if you think about a circus, right? And they have this room of auras where the mirrors are, and you stand in front of a mirror and it squashes you up or it extends you, right? So for me as a Black woman, those mirrors are society's stereotypes of me. When I look in the mirror, I do not recognize myself. I'm like, that's not me. And so what do? I overcompensate. Right. I see myself squashed. Then I'm like, I'm trying to extend my arms, but it doesn't work because I did not create that mirror.
Do you think that's a common feeling?
Yes.
When you describe it now, I think I recognize it from people we meet.
Yeah.
You squeeze yourself in, but you really.
Yeah. But they overcompensate. Yes. They get all the degrees. They say, oh, I I'm from here, but I also, I'm from this, but I also went to Harvard. I'm like to overcompensate.
Try to fit in.
Because that mirror is showing something else.
Very good image, I must say. You talk about images. This is a completely different thing, but I know that in 2 years ago, you were appointed a Hasselblad heroine in 2022, which is a celebration of talented female photographers.
Yes.
That's really an honor.
It is an incredible honor because Hasselblad is like one of the top camera brands in the world. I mean,
Swedish, I think.
It's a Swedish brand, you know, it's a Swedish brand. And there were the camera that captured the moon landings and all of that with NASA. So it's for them to recognize I'm really honored.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, and I have a relationship with them, and they're going to be supporting this project as well, the AfroSuite project. So, yeah.
Do you have we're now talking, most of our audience are international people in Sweden. What would your general tip be for them, advice, if you come here and feel marginalized or not at home? Or
you are more than enough, right? So that I'll tell them you're more than enough. And just because you feel discomfort, it doesn't mean you are ungrateful. I wrote a piece for Cosmopolitan where I was trying to kind of argue that the happiness index needs to be renamed to the comfort index, because when they keep saying all the Scandinavian countries are like top 10 most happy country, it's not true. It's the most top 10 most comfortable countries, right?
So true.
But it is. And we cannot argue that. It's comfortable, you know. And when we start mixing comfort with happiness, then people feel like they can't use their voice. They can't say that, well.
Because you're already happy, they think.
Yes.
You don't have the right to feel uncomfortable.
Exactly. But that's why maybe, you know, very wealthy people might then maybe, I'll use the word, honor life themselves, right? But and then people wonder why they did that, if they were comfortable, if they were happy, right? Yeah. So that's the word, is comfort and happiness are different things. Comfort, yes. We all pay taxes, you know, we all subscribe to that. And it's important, you know, to keep these values. Those are the things that make Sweden great, is that we collectively contribute to keep this base comfort, remove stress, right, within our control. But happiness is something different, because happiness is qualitative. It's not quantitative. You cannot measure happiness. It's not something you can quantify.
We have a new professor in Stockholm at the Stockholm School of Economics.
Yes.
Who's a professor of happiness.
Yeah, yes, yes. Oh, I need to meet them. I would love to chat with them, because it's very difficult to, happiness and comfort are two different things. And so that's what I would tell kind of professionals or people, you know, across the spectrum when you're coming in. Don't mix comfort with happiness. Mm. And it's not a suffering Olympic. So even if you come from a more privileged background, yes, it's okay for you to feel the way you feel. And that's what I put in the dedication of In Every Mirror She's Black. Mm. That's exactly the dedication, is to anyone who has ever felt kind of isolated or unappreciated or unacknowledged, that your voice matters and you're allowed to exist without explanation, and your worries are also valid, right? So that's what I would say is, start with that, and then go from that.
Good. Really good.
And I really hope that your book soon will be translated to Swedish. Swedes can read it in their own language.
I know. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and tell us your story and sort of look at this idea of how might someone find their place in Sweden.
Really inspirational. I feel so philosophical now.
No, thank you for having me.
Gave me a lot of things to think about.
Thank you, Lola.
Good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Philip, this was an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
I think we both were full of new, my head is full of new images and words.
We could have talked so long.
Yeah.
It went so fast.
How is your head?
I know. Yeah, very, very full. I have a paper here with so many different words, and I'm trying to connect how I would describe maybe what I'm taking. I think something she said quite early on was this idea of what I would redescribe as the beauty that can come from pain. Hard situations, there's actually fruit that can come with it, both for our own growth, but also to empathize with others and care about them. So I think that's, and it reminds me of the Japanese technique of kintsugi, where they don't throw away things like bowls that break. They actually fashion them back together with gold lacquer, and they become more valuable. And I think it's actually a great picture of the pain and suffering we experience as humans, and the beauty that can come out of that. Yeah. So what about you?
I bring with me also the value of words and how you... To be careful what words you use. Lola talked about assimilation rather than integration, and it's such a big difference.
Mm.
And also grace. I mean, she's using words I normally don't think so much about, but they are so important. And I think we should really be careful which words we use.
Yeah.
And that words is such an art.
Yeah.
So I have to run home and read her books.
Yes. Yes. And you can find all the links to Lola's books in the description, along with other things we've talked about. And make sure to follow along for our next episode. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is produced by Stockholm's Akademiska Forum.
Stockholm is a state of mind. Yeah. We break it down like this and like that. Welcome to the podcast.